Welcome to another ABC Radio National podcast. For more information, go to abc.net.au/rn.
Well, I think you know, 2009, this year, is the International Year of Astronomy. We celebrate 400 years since Galileo pointed his newly improved telescope to the heavens. There were a few Dutch telescopes around already, but Galileo made the instrument usable for astronomy. Trouble is, he did so in December, 400 years ago. But in July of 1609, an Englishman, Thomas Harriot, did the same thing, also peering at the moon and getting excellent images, which he duly recorded. To see his lunar map, you can open this month's Discover magazine on page 12, and there it is. So, why are we waiting until December and recognising Galileo and not going for broke in a couple of months' time and shouting, Harriot? Well, it seems the pioneering fellow perished by not publishing. He was too well off and not hungry enough, like Galileo, and so never got round to it. But in July at the Science Museum in London, there will be an exhibition of Harriot's maps, so his name will be remembered. So what will we do when the anniversary comes around again, say in 2059? Well, it won't be Harriot or even Galileo we'll be thinking of, but the way in which the new field of gravitational wave physics has just saved the planet from the impact of a giant bullet from outer space. Radio National, as you know, is very keen these days to bring out its archives and replay old programmes. But this is the very first time I know of that we've actually been able to bring you a broadcast from the future, 50 years from now. Here is Professor David Blair in Perth. He's over 100, his beard is pure white and moth-eaten, but he's still able to lecture. Professor Blair.
Welcome to Gravitational Astronomy 101. You are starting university in an auspicious year, the second International Year of Astronomy. The first was 50 years ago, in 2009. Back then, we celebrated 400 years of the telescope. Astronomy had never been more exciting, with space telescopes bringing stunning new discoveries year after year. The universe was awesome, but remote. Except for a small worry about near-Earth objects that could crash down without much warning, the cosmic spectacle that had been uncovered was far away, and there was nothing to worry about. It wasn't actually friendly, but it was safe. Today we celebrate 450 years of telescopes. The universe seems distinctly unfriendly. In 2009, gravitational astronomy didn't even exist. Today, gravitational astronomy and space technology are crucial to our survival. This course will tell you why. I want to start our course with a brief review of the history of gravitational astronomy, starting from the Eta Carinae supernova that occurred at the tail end of 2009. You'll be in mid-career when the cosmic bullet hits, and a good understanding of gravitational astronomy will be useful for anyone remotely involved in the SHIELD project. In 1608, news of the Flemish invention of the telescope spread like wildfire across Europe, and by 1609, Galileo was observing craters on our moon and discovering the moons of Jupiter. Just 5 years before these discoveries, Kepler recorded a supernova, the brilliant appearance of a new bright star. From that date until 2009, for the entire time since the invention of the telescope, there had been a complete absence of supernovae in our galaxy. Astronomers thought this very unfair. If you had been born in the year 1000, you could have seen two supernovae in a lifetime, and the same if you had been born in 1550. But the unfairness of the 400-year absence is nothing compared with the unfairness of the Eta Carinae supernova. For the Earth, the coming cosmic bullet is a one-in-a-million-year event. But I digress. Let's focus on the gravitational astronomy. Over the years, before the Eta Carinae supernova, there had been many years of painstaking development of gravitational wave detectors. The World Detector Array that now runs autonomously was in its infancy. There was not even one Southern Hemisphere detector. The angular resolution, which we will derive in the next lecture, was lousy. The Eta Carinae supernova was a major embarrassment to science. Even though Electromag astronomers had been predicting it for half a century, no one noticed when it actually happened. The gravity signal was so different from any predicted waveform that it too was only identified months after the event. So the most momentous astronomical event in human history, one that, as you all know, threatens to put an end to human history, was ignored for days until a few amateurs noticed the changes in Eta Carinae. The trouble was that Eta Carinae was very special and very rare. One star amongst 100 billion that was more than 100 times as heavy as our Sun. Its light was blanketed by a thick surrounding nebula, and the prompt gamma-ray burst only lit up a tiny corner. Getting an accurate distance to Eta Carinae was the key to predicting the shock arrival, which, as you know, is expected in 2081, just 22 years from now. Like all gravitational wave burst signals, the Eta Carinae signal gave us its distance, which is 7,239 light-years. You would think that was sufficiently far away for the Earth to be safe. To see why it's not, you have to understand gluons and the strong field nonlinear coupling in supersymmetric loop quantum gravity. In the 1960s, John Archibald Wheeler was studying the equations of general relativity. He discovered that they predicted an entirely new entity, which is called a gluon. They are gravitationally bound entities of pure gravitational or electromagnetic energy. Energy is mass. If there's enough energy, it can confine itself by its own mass, either in three dimensions, like a dog chasing its own tail, or in two dimensions, like a sheet of water that condenses into droplets by the surface energy of the water. Most astrophysicists believed that gluons could not actually exist. This was despite Gell-Mann's totalitarian principle, which says, if it is not prohibited, then it is compulsory. The totalitarian principle has a pretty good record of being right. Black holes were not prohibited by the laws of physics, and much later they were discovered. The same with neutron stars, found to be possible in the 1930s and only discovered 30 years later. You with your hand up. I know what you're going to say. It didn't work for extraterrestrial civilizations. I'll come to that one later. Anyhow, like black holes, gluons are not prohibited by the laws of physics, so they must be out there. But the theory was not quite right. Wheeler didn't consider gravitino-neutrino coupling. It is this that causes strong-field gravitational wavefronts to gravitationally condense into gluon-like bubbles that propagate at about 99% of the speed of light. By the end of the course, you should be able to derive the threshold gravitational wave amplitude for the creation of gravitino-neutralino gluons. Some of you are looking a bit lost. The main idea is this. The energy pulse from the supernova is so enormous, its mass energy is several times the mass of the Sun. The energy pulse is distorted and breaks up by its own gravity, condensing into numerous gravitationally localized objects. These are the cosmic bullets. So the Eta Carinae supernova in 2009 broke the supernova drought, but also gave us the Great Flood, which is on its way. And for physicists, it broke the drought in our understanding of the universe. At this time, physics had been derailed by an impossibly complex theory called string theory. It was like Ptolemy's theory of the solar system that derailed astronomy for more than a millennium. While physicists used string theory to try to solve an apparent incompatibility between quantum mechanics and gravity, astronomers were invoking stuff they called dark matter and dark energy to explain galaxy rotation and cosmic expansion. Physics was in a mess. The key to the great synthesis was in the 2009 gravity wave data. The breakdown of general relativity at the black hole event horizon seems obvious today, but it took Arttulu 20 years to figure it out. It's the non-linearity of classical general relativity that causes the instabilities that turn shock fronts into cosmic bullets. This is the fundamental cause for the catastrophe of the coming shock, and you must understand it in detail. At the end of the course, I'll expect you to be able to derive both the gravitino-neutralino shock front structure, as well as its peak intensity and arrival time from the gravity wave data, using Ohtulu's strong coupling theory. You'll need to understand how the scalar field drives the coherent decay of the shock when it interacts with stellar plasma. You'll need to be familiar with the extragalactic data that confirmed the theory, and be able to show how propagating gravitino-neutralino geon condensates explain both cosmic expansion data and galaxy rotation. This will test your understanding of the Great Synthesis. Now let's return to that question about the totalitarian principle. The absence of advanced galactic civilizations was always thought to be due to their inability to control self-induced climate change. I don't believe that theory because we have successfully developed our own climate engineering, and it is this that may give us the tools to create the shield. They could do the same. A more likely explanation is that most civilizations do not develop an understanding of gravitino-neutralino geons. Thus, they are unable to predict incoming shocks and take protective measures. I hope some of you will go on to work for the SHIELD project and make sure we do not follow their footsteps. So now, let's get down to work. The first wall screen shows the Ohtulu equation.
And at this point, we lost contact with the link to the year 2059. So you'll have to be patient in your quest to understand strong coupling theory. But just remember, it's only here at ABC Radio National that you can learn about the threshold gravitational wave amplitude for the creation of gravitino-neutralino geons. And such gravitational wave physics is set to save the Earth in just a few years' time. David Blair is Professor of Physics at the University of Western Australia and will be apparently for the next 50 years. And he runs the observatory at Gingin, where they look for gravity waves. Next week, we travel to the Red Centre of Australia to hear from Libby Robin about how those unbelievably astute pelicans can know when it's actually raining so much in the desert that it floods and they can fly there to reproduce. I'm Robin Williams, and do look after your geons.
You've been listening to another ABC Radio National podcast. ABC Radio National, on air and online, with many of our programs available as podcasts or MP3 downloads. All the details at abc.net.au/rn/podcast.